The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Tony O'Reilly sitting in front of me spent 3 years in prison after his conviction for taking 1.7 million from Unpust, his employer, when he was a branch manager in Carlow. The reason he did it was he had developed a chronic gambling addiction which involved spending 10 million euro over how many years, Tony?
Would have been over, I started my online account in 2003, so just over 7 years, with the majority of it done in the last year and a half.
Okay, it seems extraordinary. Now, Declan Lynch is with us as well. You helped Tony write this book. Is this all factual? There's no fictionalised accounts in here. Is this all factual, the whole thing?
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's almost unbelievable.
The thing that struck me about Tony's story from the very start was that there are so many parts of it that in movies they make up, right? You know, that they, based on a true story, except they make up about three quarters of it and they do what they call conflating, right?
Yes.
With Tony, it was everything was ready conflated, if you like. You know what I mean? There was, it just had this, just these graphic images, like say of him driving in the snow, the last big snow we had.
The 2010 snow.
Yeah. That Tony had to be in the Gorey post office because he was in charge of it and all his, it was really a lot of money down at the time. And he had to be there. And so he got out of bed at 5 o'clock in the morning and drove in the kind of snow that we had.
From Carlow.
Yeah, from Carlow to Gorey. And took about 4 hours, died almost several times, but somehow got
nearly
there.
Nearly crashed the car a number of
times. Right.
And that was just...
But why? Why did you have to get to the post office?
Because if I hadn't got there, the amount that I'd taken at the time would have been uncovered because someone else would have had to go in and open up safes. And it would have been discovered. So
were
I had to get
there. You literally taking cash out of the safes?
At the end of it, yeah.
How much?
At the start, it would have been a couple of thousand of bundles of 50s, but at the end, I was literally just taking bundles of 50s out of it and putting it over the counter in Paddy Power.
Hang on, how were you able to do that?
I had access to the safes.
But were you not still having to sort of hand over the cash? Was there not a security van coming for it each week to bring it back to headquarters in Dublin or anything like that?
Cash would usually just come in.
Come in and go out.
Generally wouldn't go out. It'd go out through different payments, but it generally would just come in.
But surely there would have been a shortfall in money for the payments going out.
That's what I was trying to cover up each time. As it got bigger, it was just a matter of changing figures just to cover up.
So simultaneously, as well as placing as many bets as you are, presumably studying the odds and the form and all the rest of it, you were doing that, you're simultaneously trying to orchestrate a cover-up and a fraud on the other side.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been as much as studying the form at that stage. At the earlier stages of the gambling, yes, you would have been some kind of reason towards the bets that you put on. But as I got deeper into it, and it was always about trying to get the money back into the safe, winning the amount, because I wanted to I was trying to gamble my way out with a problem, and it was just on the next available thing. That's why some of the bets that you read about in the book, or some of them that are on the online details of the bets. It was just the next available thing. It was the next.
Even if you knew nothing about the likely outcome, you were just punting on the basis that you might win.
It was online. It was just going by odds. A lot of my accumulators were short odds, 1-2s, 1-3s, 1-4s, 1-5s. You do them in an accumulator.
So they would all add up, again, multiplying off each other.
10 or 20,000 on the 1-2, you win 10,000, and then that goes on to 1-3. So you're looking at short price odds to kind of maximise the money that you get back.
Well, in a way, Matt, it seems incredible, and yet it's the most obvious thing in the world. When you open an online betting site, it's like 9 o'clock in the morning, and there's Vietnamese football available.
Which you couldn't possibly know anything
about. Who on earth is going to be betting on that apart from someone who really needs to have a bet now? You know, and if you need to have a bet on Vietnamese football at 9 o'clock in the morning, you probably don't have a normal relationship with betting, you know. So these things are here right in front of us all the time. And yet, for some reason, in general, we don't really question it. I mean, then Tony, obviously, would be the sort of person at the time who, that's why it's there. That's why those things are there. That's why tennis matches from Buenos Aires at 12 o'clock in the day, that with three people at the match, right? Who on earth is going to be betting on that apart from somebody who kind of really needs to be doing it?
Because at one stage you had one major accumulator, 14-part accumulator, and it came down to a final game in the Belgium Cup between Standard Wetteren and Lorcheren.
Yep.
And you must have known damn all about those two teams that were playing.
No, it was Scottish Cup that night and Belgian Cup, and it could have been the Carling Cup or the equivalent of the League Cup at the time. And when you're building up your accumulator, it shows how much you will win from the accumulator. So I based it on, I'm going to put an extra team in so I can get, that's the amount that I might have taken at the time from Unpost. So if I win this, I can get the money and put it back.
Because you needed 300 grand, so you put €1,750 bet on this.
Yep.
And unbelievably, it came down to the last match.
Yeah, and they were winning. I think the other team equalised. And part of the buzz of gambling online as well is watching the in-running. And I used to watch it on the Bet365 website, where the screen would go grey when something happened in a match, and that was always like
the tension. Is it going to go my way or against me?
Yeah.
And how did you feel when it went against you? Because you lost out on a possible €300,000 win. What was that the feeling like?
Horrible, you feel like, you know, there was a time with the John Arnarisa in the Champions League against Chelsea. As soon as they scored the own goal, it wasn't for that amount of money, but I just went to bed. I just had to cover my head. I just felt sick. But then you kind of come back from it. Then you kind of, you say, well, it's just a bit of bad luck, and then you start again. It's like the time when I lost the 462,000 in the 12-hour spell.
How could you lose that? I mean, even letting alone, we'll get to how you had that money to lose, but how could you lose that money so quickly?
At the time, I had taken 900,000. So I felt I needed to double this up as such. I needed to get this up to from 460,000 to 900,000 to put it back. So again, it was the next available bets that day. So it was during the day. And then there's something called the chase. You would hear a lot of time in gambling that when I lost the first couple of thousand, the first couple of bets, the bets became more erratic, more random, more compulsive as such, that you're just betting on the next.
Okay, take me back. How did this all start?
A £1 bet in 1998 on it was the quarter final at the World Cup, France 98. And I was working in a bar in Carlow called Scrag's Alley, and I was in behind the bar, and there was a customer who was going down to place a bet. And I was 24 at the time, I'd never placed a bet before. So I decided to go down with him to have a look, and maybe I was going to back Patrick Kluivert to score first. So I went down, I was on my lunch break, went down to the bookie office at the end of the stairs from the back of the pub, and I went in, and I think Kluivert was 6 or 7 to 1 to score first. So we were just in there, I was kind of looking around, I had never been in the bookie office before, I was kind of getting a kind of sense of what it was. And he was going to back Holland to win 2-1. And we just looked up on the board, and it was 45-1 for the two bets to come together. So I put £1 on it, he put £1 on it, and he had a few other bets, small bets. So we went back up and started watching the match. Kluivert scored first, Argentinian equalised after 19 minutes. And then for the next 70 minutes, that's I became really involved. That was when I got that initial buzz that you often hear about with gamblers, and that rush of adrenaline, and then Burkham scored that goal.
The wonder goal.
It was just...
The worst goal of your life.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
It probably hooked you, did it?
Yeah. That was that. It was that. I remember going to bed that night thinking, this was easy. That was half a week's wages for me at the time, £46. And I said, this is easy. And that feeling of, even more so the feeling of predicting the future, the feeling of getting this right, the feeling of being able to be... nearly brag about it that I won this bet. You know, you feel...
You knew better than the bookies.
Yeah, it was that kind of feeling.
How did it develop from then? How quickly did it
stay at that level for a good few years? And I just described today that it was when Benitez was appointed Liverpool manager 2004. I had €100 on it. A friend of mine got good kind of word that he was going to be appointed soon. And it was even money. I think I done it on Betfair at the time. And it was even money. And I thought at the time, I think this was a lot of money. And we put it on, and within a couple of hours, he was announced. So I won the €100. And we got a tip for a horse that evening in the house. We got a phone call. It was three of us living in the house together, and it was 6-1. So we all went down with the our €20 to the bookie office to put on €20 on this horse at 6-1. But I put the winnings off the Benitez bet. So that was €600, €700. And then that was that was another moment. I described other moments in the book, but that was the kind of, I was just even reflecting on it, and that would have been a moment that I would have kind of, it brought it to a different level. And then there's that bet that we talked about in the book, the 50 euro double.
Tell us about that.
That was 50 euro double in 2005. I came home from work and it was the final of the UEFA Cup between CSK Moscow and Sporting Lisbon. And I'd been following the football, you know, I've been looking at CSK Moscow for the season. I thought they were a good team. They were 1-0 down at half-time and Sporting Lisbon were playing at home. The final was in their home ground. So I just looked at the odds. I logged on to my online account and looked at the odds, and CSK Moscow were 10-1 to win the match because they were 1-0 down at half-time. So I decided to put money on it, and then it just, something caught my eye, and I saw Bobby Zamora was 8-1 to score first in the semi-final of the playoff. So I decided to do a 50-euro double. So the way that unfolded as well, I went up to have a shower and I came back down for the second halves, and they equalised shortly after the break, shortly after the, in the second half, and then I switched over to the other channel and Bobby Zamora just scored. So then I knew one part of the bet was up and I just needed CSK Moscow to score a second goal, and there was posts hit. There was, and then they ended up winning 3-1 in the end. And that was the one, I think, that really kind of hooked me in on it.
You become addicted. It was like a heroin addict, except
it was
rush, gambling.
It was, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the thing about the winning, you were saying about Tony losing 460 grand. He had that. In order to do that, he had won 460 grand over about 2 or 3 days over a long weekend, and then just blew it completely. And I found, looking through this amazing record of all his bets, which is like a big tribunal report, you know, that it's a really perverse thing, because your heart sinks not with all the losers, but with the winners. Right, you're thinking, oh God, no, he's after winning 54 grand, right? Because,
but then he would just go and bet it again.
This is, so you develop this really kind of counterintuitive attitude to it. Here's like that particular bet that started him off, right? The double, like, it was such an excellent bit of punting, if you like, and yet, you know, it was disastrous.
Yeah, but it's also, you could say, madcap if you're doing doubles and trebles and accumulators and stuff like that. Tell us about being taken to horse racing events and football matches by Paddy Power, because you were such a good client.
I was taken to two events in the latter part of my gambling. I was taken to the, I got a phone call to say I was after getting tickets to the UEFA Cup final that was held in the Aviva. And we were brought to a corporate box. There was probably 20 in the box. We were given drink and meal and sat down in the box and watched the match. I actually had, I think I had 500 euro on the first goal scorer on that one. And there was no one there. There was no one kind of there. We just walked into the event and we were sitting there. But we were brought to the Curragh, or I was brought to the Curragh. That was actually the Sunday before the news broke about my gambling. And I was so convinced, I was just about to get discovered, that I'd given my tickets to a friend of mine saying that I'd won them. And he was kind of thinking, how did you get these tickets? So I had to obviously lie and say that I got them and won them as a prize. And we arrived on that day. I was to collect 3 ordinary tickets in my local book as well. They'd give me 3 kind of tickets to get in. So we decided to go up, and myself and my friend went into the box, and I just said to the person who was looking after the box, I said, is there any chance to get my other friend up? So the 3 of us were in the box, drinking Bollinger champagne, beside, I think it was JP McManus was beside us in the box beside us, my friend getting pictures taken with him. But I was very shy to it. Paddy Power himself was in the box with a few other people. We were all in jeans and shirts and they were all in suits. And I was very shy. I didn't want to even make eye contact. I didn't want to be for any contact with anyone there. So my friends would kind of say, well, how do you know these people, or why are they talking to you? Because as far as they were concerned, I had won these tickets. So
rather than there as a favourite client, how did you get caught?
It just caught up with me. I was driving to work on a Wednesday morning, and I just got a phone call of one of my colleagues saying that the audit team were there. It was going to catch up with me. I kind of knew that from probably Christmas 2010. I knew that even if I did get the money back in, it was going to eventually catch up with me.
1.75 million euro.
And the majority of that was taken from Christmas 2010 to June, when it was discovered. 1.4 million of it was in that 6 months.
You ran, and I remember it being a news story we covered at the time, you ran and went to Northern Ireland, but extraordinarily you got caught because you went placing a bet.
Yeah, I ended up in Belfast, and because I needed to produce identification for to stay in a hotel. I just drove to the smallest town from that, and it was in Carrickfergus, and I was still gambling while up there, still believing that I didn't have a problem, still believing that I could get this money back, even though I knew I was going to have to face the consequences for what I'd done. And I'd ran out, the money had gone. I had a betting slip that had come up by 10,000 on a betting slip, and I had no online money. So I drove into Belfast that Friday night from Carrickfergus, and it was when I tried to cash in the docket, they would have had to ring the local office that I placed in, which was Gorey. So then when I was leaving the office, I was caught on the CCTV leaving the office, and that's how my family found me, was through Google Maps of the cobblestones outside. They came looking for me the following day.
And you ended up spending 3 years in prison?
3 years in prison, yeah.
How did you cope with that? And how did you deal with the break from the gambling, given that it was an addiction?
I think it was the enormity of it all, really, when it broke. I was struggling for the first couple of weeks. I went into treatment in Coomvera 3 weeks after the news broke, and that's where I got the help from my addiction. I spent 3 months there dealing with the feelings and emotions, dealing with my addiction, going to GA meetings. And I stayed on after I finished my program there, right up in the time when I was sentenced, on a kind of a voluntary basis, helping people in the detox unit settle in. People were coming in for both gambling and for alcohol problems. And that kind of helped me get prepared for what I knew was coming down the line.
But I still can't get over how Paddy Power didn't stop you. If you start winning large amounts, they stop you. And presumably you won large amounts of some kinds, or was it because your account was always in the negative, they just let you keep gambling more money?
I won large amounts. I think the largest amount I won in any one online bet was a quarter of a million, 238,000, I believe. And it was never questioned, either my winning or my losing was never questioned.
Never questioned?
I never questioned at the counter, and Paddy Power never questioned afterwards. Or it was questioned, sorry, afterwards. Someone stopped me in the street of Carlow and asked me, was I okay? They thought it was the Russian. I got money off the Russian mafia. They thought I'd won money on the lottery, or thought I'd gotten inheritance off my grandmother.
At the end of the book, Paddy Power was asked to contribute, gave a statement saying, "We don't discuss the details of individual customer accounts, past or present. We were continually evolving our responsible gambling procedures and improving our interaction with customers who display signs of harm. There are naturally positive developments in our approach now from the time of this case." Because, Declan Lynch, it really strikes me, the gambling addiction in this country is getting more and more prevalent. It's not just going into bookies, but now that you can do it from your home, online, or on your smartphones, that you're given, although you mentioned Vietnamese soccer earlier, but things like if you're watching a game on Sky, you're bombarded with advertisements from all sorts of companies betting how many corners is going to be, who the first scorer in the second half is going to be. Yeah. I mean, this has become just a part of life, and yet look at the consequences, much as you have ruining lives like alcoholism does, or drug addiction.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of these things I figure it's so big that nobody even sees it anymore. I've been writing about this for years, and when Tony's story came up, immediately the things that struck it had every aspect of this phenomenon, if you like, right? One of them being the responsible gambling idea. It blew such a hole in that. Such a comical almost hole in the whole idea of the responsible gambling thing. You know, we will monitor your account to see if you have a problem or whatever, right? And then, of course, the enormity of the amounts. But in one man's story, I mean, I say in the book like that Tony's an ordinary man who got swept away in this addiction, but he's also very exceptional. Person who has come through this nightmare. I don't know anyone who has been so far into hell as Tony has. I mean, he went to jail. Everything bad that could happen to him happened, short of dying virtually. And that he has come through all that and is able to be sitting here and talking about it and helping people to get some insight into this is a really remarkable thing, you know.
But how will you cope with something like next week, the wall-to-wall coverage of Cheltenham, for example? I mean, how much of an itch or a temptation will there be for you?
I've made my life to be a life that gambling's not part of it anymore, and that's through hard work and through working on my recovery each day. It's about being proactive every day in that, you know, looking after my life balance, making sure that I'm open when I'm feeling struggling with stuff, that I have them avenues to be able to talk about my problems instead of bottling them up. And in that way, I'm always minding that I don't slip back into the escapism from my problems, which was gambling.
What would your advice be to people who do gamble?
Ask for help. don't let pride, ego and fear that stop me asking for it, stop you asking for it. There's loads of help out there. At the moment, I'm helping people. There's numerous organisations out there. Even since the book came out on my website, tonyjoreilly.ie, there's been a lot of people contacting, looking for advice, looking for help, just looking even to chat. And I'm trying to make myself available to as many people as I can, just to even be at the end of a phone to them. That's what I'm trying to do. That's what I hope to. That's what I hope to achieve from the book, to help as many people as I can, and to create awareness about this addiction that is
rife in Ireland. And I think the proceeds are also going to gambling addiction charity. Yeah. Tony O'Reilly, Declan Lynch. It is an extraordinary story. It is a really cautionary tale. Tony 10, the astonishing story of the postman who gambled €10 million and lost it all. Thank you both very much
thanks,
for joining
Matt,
us.
Thanks, Matt. Thank you.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.